All eyes are going to be on Sonny Styles, Antonio Williams, and, I mean, everybody else the Commanders drafted. And then, of course, down the road, it's going to be guys that aren't just rookies, but Commanders rookie minicamps going on now. We know that there's a lot of questions around certain players that were drafted in certain positions, mainly Antonio Williams. It's amazing to me how much of just a polarizing player Antonio Williams has become with this fan base. With you, because, right, need a wide receiver. Draft him in the third round. Is he going to be enough? They could have gone bigger. I mean, it's been an endless thing. For a third-round wide receiver, it's amazing how much the spotlight has been on Antonio Williams since the Commanders drafted him. Luckily, David Harrison jumps on with us now, and he's been out there. He's seen that, and he's going to be the level-headed mind that kind of helps when I lose my mind. As of course, he does Locked On Commanders, Commander Squad with me, WSA9 as well. I saw you write about this at WSA9.com, David, and is this now going to... We had the Patriot way. That was a thing. Now that might be something different, depending on what happens with Mike Vrabel. Is Commander Standards going to be a thing? Is Dan Quinn trying to really make this a thing?
I don't know if he's trying to make it a motto or a slogan or anything. But I think it's just a good way to illustrate another phrase that he has is how we get down, right? And I think that's just really, it's about understanding kind of what you've gotten yourself into. And obviously, if you were drafted, by this team or even signed as an undrafted free agent, there's somewhere along the line where the scouts and the decision makers all believe that you're going to fit into what that means. It's one thing to have kind of the philosophical agreement or thought process. It's another thing to kind of walk the walk, so to speak. And I think yesterday was a good starting point for a lot of those guys.
So what stood out to you from what you've been able to see?
I think rookie camp is all about having a conversation with another reporter out there. And it's just looking like that you belong, right? Just looking like you belong on that field. We've watched a lot of practices on that field, a lot of training camps on that field. Does it look like you belong there? Or do you look out of place? And, unfortunately, sometimes guys are going to look out of place, and usually those are guys you don't see come back for training camp and things like that. But the good news is you always want your draft picks to look like they fit. And, a guy like Sonny Styles, Antonio Williams, just really across the board, they all looked like they fit on an NFL field. And that's a great first step to take. But, I mean, Sonny, not just because he was the first pick in their class, obviously, but really just for everything that he was billed to be. I said this on Locked On Commanders this morning, it's still a small sample size. It's his very first practice. You don't want to get anything too overblown on anything, but you only have what you have. And the sample size that we have, he continues to check every block that you want him to check.
There's something about Sonny Styles that just goes beyond like great football player. And you've obviously had a chance to be around him at least, a little bit here. I know in the short time that he's obviously been with this team, but there's this like face of the franchise feel to him, right? Do you get that feeling at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, quarterback, the defense, all that stuff. I mean, he's got the carry. I was talking with a member of the organization yesterday, and I think I mentioned this to you before. I could see this guy being a battalion commander in the United States Army if he wanted to be. You know what I mean? He's got this kind of executive type of feel to him. But at the same time, you can see it in the way that he moves, in the way that he is obviously prepared for the moment, and calling out the signals and then calling out the plays and communicating with his teammates. It honestly kind of takes me back to Jaden. Jaden's rookie camp, one of the first things that was really impressive about him, I think it was the first time they lined up in sevens. It was just a 7-on-7 drill for what it's worth. I can't remember who the receiver was. It doesn't really matter. But they line up and he calls over the receiver and he's like, hey, take two steps in. And, the receiver moves and gets him aligned properly, snaps the ball and then hits the route. And it's day one, first practice in the NFL, and this guy's already out there, kind of dictating the pace to his teammates and controlling things. And, it's that kind of thing that you're looking for in this type of role. And I think Sonny has already kind of done it. But, yeah, he's got that just kind of feel to him, but he's also got the physicality to be able to do it.
David, there's obviously intangibles on the field, like high football IQ and athleticism this team was certainly looking for. But, when Dan Quinn talks about football character being a primary goal for this mini camp that you wrote about, and, it's just, I feel like you really, it's it's always a good sign when you can see it just even from just interviews and the way players carry themselves. And again, we haven't seen every single rookie, you know, in front of the camera consistently. Yeah. Sonny Styles is all over the place. But if that's going to be your first round pick and that's the way he carries himself, and I think you said something that was key there, quarterback of the defense, Jaden Daniels and Sonny Styles seem to be very similar in terms of like mature beyond their years. And I feel like that's a really good sign because as we know, in the past, culture was not a thing for this organization.
Right. Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, those two guys, you know, they absolutely have kind of the makeup that you would look to and the character that you would look to be the faces of the franchise moving forward, you know. And we know the face of this franchise right now, you know, obviously Jaden is one of them now, but, you know, Terry McLaurin is on that list, but he's getting, you know, a little bit older. I don't know how close to the end of his career he is. I've done a recent comparison with him and Larry Fitzgerald. And I mean, at this point in Larry Fitzgerald's age, I mean, he still played like 7-8 more years. So, I mean, Terry, you know, I think a lot of times we talk about Terry like he's on the edge of retirement, and that's not necessarily the case depending on how things go here in the next few years. But, you know, there's obviously been a big, you know, page-turning effort from this organization, from the sale to the team rebranding to the rebranding of the team rebranding to the new stadium to Jaden, to the coaching staff, to Adam Peters. Like, again, there's just everybody feels it. And so, you know, eventually you have to get to kind of who's the new era of the face of the burgundy and gold. And obviously Jaden fits that bill from a charisma standpoint and all that kind of stuff. If he can stay healthy and get back to the ball that we know he can play, Sonny feels like a guy early on that can also be that next, you know, great burgundy and gold representative.
Talking to David Harrison here on The Fan and the team, you know, when you look at Antonio Williams, and again, I know he's a rookie, he's a third-round pick, there's going to be, but when we just kind of try to guess at this point, a lot of it's guessing, what his role could be, what do you see for a rookie season for Antonio Williams?
Yeah, inside out. I think that, you know, I think he's going to play most of the snaps in the slot, but I think you're going to see him play the Z, you know, outside receiver, you know, position, things like that. I think you'll see a lot of reduced sets in his outside alignment, so you know, he may not be like all the way on the perimeter as a Z receiver, maybe more, you know, lined up on the numbers, things like that. But you're still going to see him kind of get some of those reps. And, you know, when David Blau told us at WSA9 that he wanted to get Terry McLaurin 10 reps or 10 targets a game, you know, obviously caught a lot of attention. And one of the things that I kind of ideated, and we talked about this on Commander Squad, is, you know, Terry getting into the slot more. And I think a lot of that kind of predicated, I think a lot of us were on that kind of same vibe. So that predicated the opinion that, okay, well, in the NFL draft, when Elijah Surratt or Malachi Fields or Ted Hurst was available, that maybe that's where the Commanders would go, because that's kind of the easiest way to see Terry move more into the slot, right? As you get another big, you know, you get another X receiver type of guy on the roster. So when they went Antonio Williams, and he made us all kind of step back, reset, look at this thing with new eyes. And what I've kind of looked at is we all kind of have this David Blau, Ben Johnson connection, and certainly that connection is there. And Chig Okonkwo said that, you know, when he sat down with the coaching staff, they showed him clips of the Lions offense with Ben Johnson. So obviously that's going to be an influence there. But I think there's also going to be that Kevin O'Connell influence. You know, David Blau spent time working with Kevin O'Connell, and O'Connell and McVay and Shanahan and LaFleur in Green Bay and Taylor in Cincinnati. They all kind of run very similar type of operations with some wrinkles here and there. And the big thing that I've studied with those guys, looking deeper into that connection, not instead of the Ben Johnson, but in addition to the Ben Johnson connection, is how much they use their stars as those Z receivers. And, you know, you look at Jamar Chase, Puka Nacua, those types of guys. Those guys are used very, very often as Z receivers. And you have complementary X receivers like T. Higgins in Cincinnati, DeMarcus Robinson in Los Angeles, Brandon Ayuk in San Francisco, for interestingly enough, who get a lot of those X receiver positions. And it's not so much that the X receiver in those systems are kind of forgotten, but more so accentuating the flexibility the Z receiver gives you without getting, you know, too football nerdy into it. Like, the X receiver can't motion as easily or as with as much versatility as the Z receiver can, because the Z receiver is automatically in the backfield, et cetera, et cetera. So these new modern offenses have found a way to really leverage that backfield receiver in the Z and the slot position. So for me, I think you can see a lot of Terry and Antonio really kind of being a little bit of mix and match, you know, slot receiver, Z receiver. I think Terry's obviously still going to get some X reps. But what really stood out to me was early on in McVay's days in Los Angeles, when he really started to kind of unfold this, I call it a move Z, right? So Z receiver that's going to be on the move a lot. When he really started to unfold this in Los Angeles, the X receiver that he used and the X receiver that really had a career kind of breakout season before injuries and other things really derailed him was Van Jefferson. And so now Van Jefferson is here. So when you look at, well, Terry is going to do a lot more Z and slot, and Antonio Williams is going to do some slot and some Z, who's the X then? Van Jefferson stands out as a guy who could potentially do. He's got experience in a similar size system in Los Angeles. Treylon Burks is basically the T. Higgins physical model type of player. So you have two guys already on the roster, and then you look at De'Ami Brown, and you know, it's been a minute since I've seen him try to do this kind of thing in person, but if he is develops more veteran savvy as far as getting off press and doing things like that at the line of scrimmage, he certainly has the long speed to be a threat and to be a table setter. So any of those three guys, they play the X, they don't have to be the feature receiver in the offense. They can be a table setter, a contributor, and get, you know, three to four targets a game in the meantime. But that allows you to accentuate and move Terry McLaurin, and then it also allows you to open up things for Antonio Williams, and then on down to Chigakonkwo, Rashad White as a receiving back.
First off, David, you should never be concerned about getting too football nerdy with me. It's totally fine, and I know it makes you happy, and that's very important. I'm glad you brought up Van Jefferson, though, because obviously, look, there's rookies that we can look at, but we've seen very little, and I want to get to the backfield in a second, but you mentioned Van Jefferson. I mean, look, there's a lot of questions about, like, what this receiver room is going to look like. And Brandon Ayuk aside, I mean, we're just going to keep playing that game until we actually have a result there. But, you know, there are certain questions about whether or not, like, Van Jefferson will make this team or what Treylon Burks is going to look like. And I get it. We've got to go through camp and preseason. There's so much that's there. But the way you paint a picture about Van Jefferson's role specifically tells me, at least, if that is the case and that result, you know, basically everything you painted works out, that Van Jefferson should be a part of this team. That wasn't just a body for camp type of signing.
No, I think it's an underrated signing, you know, and again, health is going to be a big part of it. But I mean, the man, like if the key thing is if that is part of David Blau's plans, right? Again, it all makes sense on paper and when you lay the ingredients out on the table, but once the chef actually steps up to the stove, you never know what's going to be put together. If that is really kind of what we're looking for, I mean, yeah, Van Jefferson's got the experience doing it. You know what I mean? And you look at the group of receivers on the roster, really, he has the most experience doing it. In some ways, he has the best experience doing it. I know that, you know, his best season is, you know, years, you know, separated from what it is now and all that stuff. But look, he's also a guy that got 51 targets with the Tennessee Titans last year, didn't record a single drop in that time frame. I know the Titans weren't necessarily a sexy team across the NFL, but this is a guy that he's proven that he can hang in the National Football League. So, you know, if you're out there ranking, you know, guys to make this roster, I don't think I would count Van Jefferson out, especially when you look at Treylon Burks and his injury history. A lot of his injuries have been attributed to an inability, if you want to put it that way. I think it's a little bit unfair to say inability, but for lack of a better term, I'll say inability to fall, right? X receivers, we know that they climb the ladder a lot. They got to go up for contested catches a lot, and they come down on the ground a lot. And a lot of Treylon Burks' injuries have come from falling on the ground and getting hurt while doing so. So if you know, I don't know if you got to go find like a fall, like go to the WWE and find a fall coach or something. You know, I don't really know how to make that better, to be honest with you. And then again, De'Ami in his career has been much more of a stretch the field, you know, vertical Z type of guy. And certainly I think there's a role there too. Because like I said, Terry's still going to get X receiver roles, right? Like I think if Terry's splits were to turn to, you know, for me personally, just like kind of what I think might happen, I would love to see Terry operate 60% of the time as the Z receiver, so off the line of scrimmage, 20% of the time in the slot, and then you got that 20% of the time where he still plays the X. Well, that 20% of the time he plays the X, you still need a Z. Now, sometimes that could be Antonio Williams, but that could also be De'Ami Brown, right? So you got that stretch the field ability with De'Ami in the Z opposite there. Of course, then you got the question, okay, what about Luke and what about Jalen? And that's what these coaches are paid for and to go out there to figure out. And I think for David Blau, it's going to be a lot of fun to come in with this kind of initial idea of here's how I can see these types of things, and then just see who shows up and see who proves you right, see who says, yes, I am part of this recipe you're trying to put together. And then when a guy shows you, if a guy shows you, I should say, that he's not, I mean, believe him. You know, if a guy goes out there and shows you like he's not built to be part of your success, believe him and, you know, give an opportunity to the next guy who wants to prove that he can be a part of your success.
Maybe Treylon Burks needs to get into jiu-jitsu or something. That might help him fall a little bit.
I don't know.
Guys do all kinds of stuff that's going to help them actually in their football career. We go back to the jokes about ballet, but it helped, or, you know, any of that. Talking to David Harrison here, the backfield for the Commanders is interesting, obviously. There is no Jeremiah Love, so we're never going to have that conversation. But you look at the way the backfield is now. You add Catron Allen in the sixth round, who, I mean, has the potential to really be a steal and fits a significant role for this team that they needed. Look, I don't expect Ja'Cory Kroski, Merritt, Rashad White, Catron Allen, Jeremy McNichols, and Jerome Ford all to be a part of this roster. But, you know, given the way that you've got a lot of receiving-type running backs already in that backfield, Catron Allen and his role is more of maybe a short yardage guy, more of a traditional running back. Like, how do you see him fitting in with this team in terms of, again, earning it in camp and going through that whole process? But I feel like this is somebody that could be a significant part of the running back rotation, even as a six-round pick.
Yeah, no, I think you can certainly see a role for him as that kind of short yardage guy, or as just kind of a power guy, someone who can really kind of set the tone physically when you need to, or help you drain the clock when you need to, you know. And that's where, you know, if Catron gets a lot of touches this season, you're hoping that it's in that effort to drain the clock at the end of the game because you're holding on to a lead, right? But even beyond that, I think his potential as a pass catcher is there. He will tell you that he's a better pass catcher than people give him credit for. He showed a little bit of that yesterday, I think. But really, in totality, he's the kind of guy that needs the pads. And when the pads come on, that's when he's going to have the ability to really kind of showcase what he can do. And then even better, when we get to joint practices, and, you know, none of those have been confirmed, but I would be surprised if the Commanders aren't involved in at least one, two, or, you know, heck, even three joint practice sessions this preseason. And when that happens and Catron can put the pads on and go up against somebody wearing a different logo where the coaches aren't going to get mad at you if you put too much of a shoulder into some dude's chest, I think that's where you're going to really be able to see that, that ability from him. But I would also add Robert Henry Jr., the undrafted free agent out of UTSA, into that mix. I think this is going to be a very entertaining battle to watch in this running back room when it gets to OTAs and especially training camp, because there's a lot of talent, like you pointed out, on that roster right now and in that room. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it all kind of sorts out. But I certainly see a role for Catron, and I think he brings something different than honestly what a lot of those other guys bring, which gives him, you know, kind of a leg up in carving out a spot.
All right, we got the schedule coming out soon. What, next week, I think, is what they officially announced. We're going to know everything. Yep. I know this stuff trickles out ahead of time. Do you have anything on the schedule you're predicting, anything that you expect to see, other than obviously the opponents? We know who those are all going to be. That's obvious.
Right, right. Yeah. They're going to play the Cowboys twice. I think London's going to be early. I don't know if it'll be the first international game. Obviously, the first international game is week one, but I don't know if it'll be the first London game, you know, so to speak, but I think it'll be one of the early games. So, you know, early October, probably looking at going to London. And I don't know about a prediction. I would love, you know, this team's got two West Coast trips. They got San Francisco and Arizona this year, and they've got London. So I would just love to see, and I know, you know, fans hate it, but I would love to see the schedule makers start the Commanders on the West Coast. Either get that San Francisco trip or that Arizona trip out of the way week one. And then, you know, from weeks 2 to 18, you got to worry about one more West Coast trip. And you got to worry about one London trip versus, you know, maybe starting at home and then maybe on the road to Tennessee. And then later on, you got to cram two West Coast trips and a London trip in. Just from a travel standpoint, you know, those guys have tight enough schedules as it is. And that travel is, you know, is significant. Nobody's ever going to say, well, if we didn't have to fly all the way to California, we would have won this game. But the travel is significant. So I'd like to see them get one of those trips out of the way early. If not week one, you know, week two, something like that.
All right, he's David Harrison. He's got a new Locked On Commanders that's up today about Sonny Styles and Antonio Williams. Check out Commander Squad, too. Pretty damn good show on top of that. WSA9.com. Whole bunch for David. Great stuff, man. Appreciate you coming on, buddy.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you.
Yeah, it's, look, we have got a long way to go to know what we're going to see from these rookies beyond first impressions. But then there's also still, you know, guys drafted last year, guys even drafted the year before. Some young players take a year or two to really develop, but you got to start showing now. This front office has to show that they know how to draft, because there's a lot of questions there. And then this coaching staff also has to show, especially now, new coordinators on both sides of the football also got to be able to show that that player development is a big part of this, because that's how you have that sustained success moving forward. I'm Nick Ashew. there is still a lot to prove for this organization, despite how far the Commanders have come over the last 2 years, right? Thanks to David Harrison, who joined us, was out at Commanders rookie minicamp. And again, you're not, we're going to see a little bit there, but it's not going to be a ton. But they drafted guys that fit needs. And again, I draft grades are stupid, but I also understand why we do them, right? It gives us some framework to look at of where we are in the moment. But I always point out too, and there's a lot of options, but like you go back and look at what people thought of the Patrick Mahomes pick for the Chiefs, and it's like terrible, and he's raw and not ready to start anytime soon, and he's MVP the first year as a starter. So it's like, okay, you know, again, that's maybe an extreme example, but my point is that you don't always get to see the full picture until a year out from a draft class. The thing is, though, if you look at where the Commanders have been draft class wise and talent and results from the younger players that have been put on this roster through the draft or otherwise, it hasn't been so good so far. Like, they do not have a reputation right now of finding talent that's young and it developing into a massive contributor for this team. Now, Jaden Daniels, different story. I get it, which in the end, if you nail quarterback, you can figure out the other positions at some point. Quarterback's the most important one. But Robert Mays on the Athletic show, I think, kind of paints a really good picture with a long list of players that have still had either no longer with the organization or still massive question marks for them.
There are too few young, exciting players on this team. Here are the top 100 picks from the Washington Commanders since 2022. Jahan Dotson, Fedarian Mathis, Brian Robinson Jr., Emmanuel Forbes, Quan Martin, Ricky Stromberg, Jaden Daniels, Johnny Newton, Mike Sainristil, Ben Sinnott, Brandon Coleman, Luke McCaffrey, Josh Connerly, Trey Amos. You just see how much those draft classes are really hurting them.
Now, I understand this is going back to 2022, so that's not everybody that is, you know, not all those guys are clearly on the roster. It's not the same front office, not the same ownership. I mean, there's a lot that's changed. I get all of that. But it is still something that's really held this team back, is you have to be able to draft well. If you're going to have draft picks, you got to hit on some of them. You've got to show that they can develop. You've got to show that that talent can take that next step moving forward. Because, you know, the guys that do, you sign them to long-term deals, at least that's the hope. Roster gets more expensive in some ways. It's a good problem to have because your players that you draft play well, but then you got to fill those gaps in with others. So it's a continuous cycle that's always there. Now, I'm not ready to sit here and write off everybody that was named there, right? That's still on this roster, like a Trey Amos. We had 1 year, different defensive coordinator. He stays healthy. Mikey Sainristil moves to the outside. That's why I was less worried about them drafting in terms of the secondary as opposed to other positions, because I'm not ready to write those guys off yet. They're still really young, and if they're put in a better position with better coaching this year, then it's not going to be as much of an issue, right? But they still have to prove it. They still have to stay healthy, and they still have to show that they are corners that are a part of this future and a part of a defense that desperately needs it. I mean, you know, guys like Quan Martin were just a liability last year. And they bring in like a veteran in Amik Robertson. Great, but I mean, you know, he's not going to be like a starter. He's not going to be a star. Like, this is, you've got to have some guys. You have to have great shutdown corners in the NFL. You just do. It's a pass happy league still, even though it's leaning a little more towards the run now. You still got to be able to defend the pass. And I know this team couldn't stop anybody anywhere doing anything defensively. I get all that. But you got to show that this is going to be an opportunity for them to take that next step. Now, I will say this. They addressed a lot on the defensive line, and they just addressed a lot, obviously, defensively as a whole, but even bringing in a Tim Settle to a lesser degree, but a Dafe Owe and, you know, Charles Omenihu, or, you know, again, all of these names were looking defensive line, even like linebackers like Leo Chenal and Sonny Styles and all that. Adding to those other positions on defense and getting pressure on the opposing team's quarterback, that takes some of the pressure off of those corners, too. There was no pressure whatsoever at all on opposing quarterbacks last year, which then gives more time to throw the football, receivers running good routes, and that then leaves corners exposed, like a Trey Amos, like a Mikey Sainristil. So it's kind of a two-parter, right? Because, yeah, you've got to be better in coverage, but there are going to be times where if you're hanging your corners out to dry and there's no pressure on quarterbacks and they're sitting back going, I got time, yeah, I'm still waiting, yeah, we got all of that. If you're in a spot where quarterbacks have all the time in the world, your corners aren't going to look as good. Your safeties aren't going to look as good. I just that's how this works. So they've still also got to be able to get after the quarterback, which will take the pressure off of all that. Again, it's an ecosystem, if you will, on this defense. And those pieces are going to have to fit well together for this team to take that next step. And hell, look, it's not even just the additions that they have on this roster, too. It's also Dorrance Armstrong healthy this year. Remember, he was out. He was still the team's leader in sacks. I think he was still sitting there a month after he was out and hurt. So that shows you how bad it was. Didn't play for a month and was still had the most sacks on the team. That's a problem. Dorrance Armstrong back and healthy. Maybe another step up for Johnny Newman. Frankie Louvu, getting Frankie Louvu from 2 years ago, not last year. That's improvement without any sort of additions whatsoever there, too. That just comes down to coaching. So there are other pieces to this puzzle that can really help with that. And again, staying healthy is going to be a massive part of that, and that's something that they're really going to have. I mean, they've added more depth. This team just needs to stay healthy. I don't know what we need to do, man. I don't know what we need to do to keep this team healthy. I don't know if there's any sort of prayers or manifestation we can do and just, as fans, sit back and just pray that this is going to be the case this year, because you just don't have a shot. I don't care, and I hate it. It's the next man up. It's not next man up if everybody's hurt and you're down to, like, your practice squad getting elevated. Okay, there's a certain point where next man up just doesn't mean anything anymore. Yeah, some of it was they got to get more depth, but they've added more depth to this roster. So now it's not as much of a question of depth as it's a question of, hey, get healthy, and then also the guys that are healthy, learn how to tackle. For the love of God, please, I'm begging this defense, begging them, please learn how to tackle. But we're not going to really know a lot about these draft grades. We're not going to know a lot about what this team actually looks like in terms of how they develop their... It's not going to be a right-away thing. So throw out A-minuses and B-pluses or how efficient the draft was. Yeah, you check the boxes in terms of position. Great. That's as far as it really goes. It's about the positions of need. Did you find somebody on the board, and then does that guy develop and contribute? Nick Ashew on The Fan and the Team. Man, I'm watching a video right now. So after the Knicks beat the Sixers last night, which was Joel Embiid's nightmare, right? He comes back, and of course it's a ton of Knicks fans. I mean, it was like everybody that you see at Madison Square Garden showed up for that game last night, too. There's a video here. The escalators at the arena, it's all Knicks fans below the escalator in a giant crowd. And Sixers fans are all standing up at the top of the escalator. Not a single person is coming down because none of them wants to go in the crowd of Knicks fans. Oh, my God. It was embarrassing. It was exactly what you'd expect, too. Exactly what you'd expect. I mean, just an absolute takeover. I mean, across the board. It was just... Listen, I get it. There's a lot of Knicks fans that... It's about being seen and being at the Garden, and it's a celebrity thing, and, you know, but isn't it kind of nice? Like, I get New York fans can be obnoxious. We still put Philly fans at the top, don't we? We definitely do. Maybe it's more on the
definitely
Eagles
the worst
side.
Fans in all sports,
right? Like, I don't know what it is. It's like New York fans, you just kind of feel like, ah, they're crazy New Yorkers. Philly fans, I feel like it's worse. I can't describe it. It just is, right?
Well, there's different kinds of New York fans too. There's like the Yankees fans, and then there's like the Mets fans. You know, like you know,
yeah,
they're
Mets
not
fans
all the
just,
same.
Mets
people.
Fans and Jets fans just suffer.
Sure. Sure, and it's and then, you know, the cocky attitude of the Yankees fans as if they have something to do with their, you know, legacy. I don't know. It's just...
I guess it is. It just does feel different, yeah, because it's, like, Philly fans, I feel like it's more straight across the board.
Like, do you think the Nets fans are turning up like that?
Do they have fans?
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's just, New York, it's, they're not all the same fan base. There's so many people there, so...
Yeah, because if you look at it, you got to think it's Nets, Mets, and Jets. Oh, there's your sign right there. They all rhyme. They're all the secondary teams in New York. They're all suffering fans. They're all jaded. They're all angry. They all hate everything. Versus Yankee fans, it's the Yankees, so there's an arrogance there. Knicks fans have been just so excited to just be excited about their team for so long. They're like a puppy that you finally that's been trying to run in place and you let go and they just start running and just banging into stuff and it's just like they're disruptive. Like, did you see the video of J.R. Smith getting just like, I mean, it was bad obviously because fans basically just like just surrounded J.R. Smith, Knicks fans, but it was like not to be obnoxious. They were just so like, we don't know what to do with ourselves. We're celebrating a team that's finally winning and feels like a legit contender. It's just, there's something about Knicks fans where they've had this pent-up energy for so long that they're excited to just be released. It's different. I don't know what, like, that's the only way I can describe it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, they've had a lot of success with some of their other teams, but the Knicks haven't been good for a while. You know, even though they've tried to build some good teams, they had Carmelo and just, you know, even with Ewing and stuff, they haven't been able to get over that hump.
Well, they've tried to, you know, they've tried to buy winners for a long time, and for the first time in a long time, it's actually worked. And, you know, in a league now where these top teams in the East and the West, a lot of their core is based off of players they drafted and developed, the Knicks are the opposite there. But it's starting to actually click now. You started to see it last year. They went to the Eastern Conference Finals, but now it's a new head coach, and it you thought for a while they were going to lose to the Hawks, and then all of a sudden they flipped it. And
they got hot.
Mike Brown figured it out, too. He's like, oh, this offense is better when we get Karl Anthony Towns involved more. He's got to stay out of foul trouble, but, you know, it's more than just Jalen Brunson kind of running the show. They made it more than that, and you're seeing something that is very different.
That photo of him dunking over Embiid is amazing, too. Have you seen that going around?
Yes.
Yeah, just an amazing shot. I think it probably came from the camera on the back of the backboard or something. But just what a cool shot.
I've seen so many memes of Mitchell Robinson dunking on Joel Embiid today. It is unbelievable. And that's what makes the internet great. Those are the things that you just love. There's so much bad on the internet, but the good is Mitchell Robinson dunking on Joel Embiid and what that looks like. And by the way, I don't blame Joel Embiid because he didn't like call out fans, right? It was after they beat the Celtics, and he just was like, we need you there. Don't sell your tickets. We don't want Knicks fans there. It's just impossible. You're not going to stop it. It's too close, and Knicks fans bought tickets and made their way down. And, I mean, you saw it. And it's funny, though, because you watched the first quarter of that game, and it felt like the Sixers woke up a little bit. You know, OG Anunoby's out for the Knicks. Joel Embiid is back after missing a game. And after that first quarter, I mean, that was it. It was just, it felt like the Knicks. Here's the thing about the Knicks, in all honesty, because, yes, for so long they've tried these different rosters, and they've tried this, let's go out and get other stars and, you know, Carmelo Anthony and everything. They feel like a different team where they're starting to actually feel like there's a winning culture that's being built there. And I think that's the difference, right? Because Karl Anthony Towns was in foul trouble last night. There's a Haka Robinson with Haka Mitchell. I don't know, whatever we want to call it. Listen, you're a professional NBA. If you're a professional basketball player and you can't shoot 30% from the free throw line, you shouldn't be on the court. I know he's great defensively and he's a great offensive rebounder, but Mitchell Robinson is such a liability at the free throw line. It's embarrassing. Yet they still overcame that. And Paul George is hot early. And like I said, no OG Anunoby and all these things for the Knicks. Jalen Brunson does what he does. Mikal Bridges looks better. The Sixers shot 29% from three. It felt like the Knicks actually looked like a complete team. And that's why I feel like you can finally look at them as a true contender out of the East. The Celtics are out. I get that. If they were playing the Celtics, you might feel differently. Though, the Knicks had a lot of success against the Celtics in the regular season. Detroit was actually a bigger problem for them. So it'll be interesting to see, depending on what happens, obviously, today and what that series looks like. Pistons-Cavs, that game tips at 3 today. If Detroit goes up 3-0 in that series, we might have two short series where it's Pistons-Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals, and the Pistons actually beat the hell out of the Knicks this year. Like, the Knicks had a lot of trouble against Detroit. So, you know, it just feels like, though, this Knicks team has, I mean, this is the key. You have to be able to evolve as a team, right? I mean, how long did we just beg Ron Rivera, if you want to pivot this thing, Ron Rivera, please, for the love of God, coach and adjust on the sidelines. We're begging you. Nothing. It was all the same constantly. This is what I do, and we're staying that way. Cool, well, you're going to get fired. You know? But you saw Mike Brown with the Knicks adjust after they're down 2-1 of the Hawks in that series, and the question was like, is CJ McCollum going to be the villain? And he's like, nah, man, I'm a dad. I'm not a villain, which is like, clearly people that tried to paint CJ McCollum as a villain don't know who he is, because that ain't who that dude is at all. But, you know, the Hawks felt like a team that was going to beat the Knicks in the first round. You're going, what is going on? And then the Knicks turned that thing around and adjusted. You have to be able to make adjustments as a coaching staff, you know, as a team, and it's in any sport. It's not just the NBA, obviously, because ask Ron Rivera again, right? But you started to see that adjustment, and I think that made a real difference. And the fact that there's this poise that the Knicks have, it makes you actually look at them and go, this team could actually get to the finals. And they haven't been there since 99. It's been a long time. They haven't been to the finals in 27 years. Dream matchup for the NBA, Thunder-Knicks. Because you'll have the big market, you'll have the star power, but then you'll have the defending champs back in the finals. It gives them credibility. It helps magnify the star power on that smaller market, but really good organization. Knicks Thunder would be such a great series.
I think Spurs Knicks would be the bigger.
You'd rather go Spurs? Oh, yeah, well, Wemby would help.
Being the face, that would be the thing that brought him into the mainstream beyond just basketball fans knowing who he is, you know?
I think, though, the only issue that I would...
Look at that New York block watching, you know? All these New York fans that don't really care about basketball, all of a sudden the Knicks are in the finals. They're going to watch. They're going to now know who Wembanyama is, the new era of basketball, you know?
You don't just have to know who
LeBron is and whatever. It's like, here's this new kid. Yeah. Who's the guy? He don't look like anybody I've ever seen. What is this? Like, be amazing.
All right, you may have me sold on that as another good option, too. I just don't think the Spurs are going to. I think the Thunder beat them in the Western Conference Finals.
They may not. The Knicks may not get the finals either, but you're talking dream scenario for, like, ratings? Yeah. I think it's got to be Wemby and the Knicks.
Yeah, you might be right. I guess the only thing that I'd look at is if you're the NBA, it's like, you know, the Spurs are going to get there. You feel like now is the chance to elevate the Thunder by getting back after winning last year, so it gives them this credibility of, like, no, it wasn't a fluke. This is a team. But I will say this. You swayed me a little bit. I can see why that would be great, having Victor Wembanyama there in the finals. I'll take either. How about that? I will take either. As an NBA fan, I will take either Knicks Spurs or Knicks Thunder in the finals, and I'll be happy. Just please no more. We know we won't have the Pacers, but that I mean, it was a great set, game seven. But, yeah, you swayed me on either one of them, Metal Chris. I think I could do both. I could work with them. Wemby's so much fun to watch. I mean, just, God, he's good. Oh, all right, I'll take either finals matchup. There you go. Nick Ashew on the Fan and the Team. I will say this, watching the NBA playoffs last night, the Spurs are growing up fast. And if you're looking for the next face of the league, right now, Victor Wembanyama is the front runner. Maybe AJ DeBonsa as a Washington Wizard after they get the number one overall pick. We're going to speak this into existence. Talk to Ben Strober at 2:30 about that as well. That might be the case, but I mean, it's just tough. It's tough to overtake somebody that has the mindset, the work ethic, the personality, the charisma, the basketball IQ, the just built like an alien, the nickname that you're alien, doing things that nobody can physically do. Victor Wembanyama brings it all to the table. Metal Chris, you told me a story during the break I think is a perfect example of just how somebody like Victor Wembanyama can become the face of the league, because the face of a league in any sport has to translate over to people that don't really care about the sport, right? Like, it's one thing for you and me to sit there and go, well, yeah, of course, like, what? Look at what he can do. This is so unique. It's the people that don't really watch the NBA that go, oh, yeah, that's Victor Wembanyama. That's Wemby. I know him, and look at him. He's just so unique. I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I think for sure. He definitely has that appeal that, like, say, like an SGA doesn't, I don't think, to just the common, not even necessarily major sports fan, but just the person that's kind of like aware. They see it on the evening news, kind of highlights here or there or whatever. And, I mean, you look at that guy, and you've never seen a guy like him on the court before. And the plays he does and the way he moves, and I think people can pick up on that in a way you wouldn't necessarily from, like, Ant-Man or, you know, SGA, things, people like that are kind of these other up-and-coming players.
I mean, Victor Wembanyama's blocking shots that – nobody else could just reach. Like, there was one block last night, right? You're like, is that a goaltend? And it's like, nope, that's at the peak of the shot. And it's a high arcing shot. And he's reaching up to the top of the backboard and blocking shots.
Like,
I mean,
he's
what
on
do you
stilts
do?
Or something.
It's right. That's the thing, is it looks so unreal. But yet at the same time, he's shooting from 25 feet out. And it's just this lanky, wacky, waving, inflatable arm flailing tube man out there doing things physically that nobody else can do. And, like, that's what makes it so cool, is it. We've got somebody that's 7'4", I guess, at this point. I don't even know. You hear 7'3", 7'4", 7'5", whatever he is. But he's playing like a guard. And that's, I mean, we just haven't seen anything like this before.
No, and even if you don't know what position he plays, like, whatever, it's, the, you know, like, playing like a guard. I think it's just that seeing this guy on the court. I was saying to my friend, I was like, it's like if you were playing NBA Hang Time and you put the height all the way up and the weight all the way down on, like, the custom character. Like, that's Wemby, you know?
NBA Hang Time. Now, I have not heard that in a while.
Yeah, I was an old friend. We used to play all the time. We used to be roommates back in the day.
We yeah,
used to play,
man,
the hang out of Hang Time. You're on fire.
Wow. So. Yeah. I know, and you're right. It's like I've always looked at it as, like, Victor Wembanyama looks like the dude that was supposed to be 6'5". That accidentally got stretched out to 7'5", and he hasn't gained the weight. He just was stretched out. I mean, he looks like a cartoon character. That's really what it comes down to. It's just somebody that we just haven't seen anywhere. He had 39 and 15 last night. But let's also keep in mind, so in the first quarter alone, when Wemby was on the floor, the Timberwolves shot 2 of 14. When Wemby was out of the game, they shot 6 of 9. He's altering the game on both sides of the floor. He's working with Hakeem Olajuwon in the post. And that's the thing, too, man. Like,
I mean, his presence on the court changes the way they play, even if he's not directly involved in the play. You know, it's like, you know, like Randy Moss was like that as a wide receiver. It's like he has ways to impact the game without actually holding the ball.
The mental, imagine, I mean, really, imagine you're 6'5", and you're you want to go to the rim, and you see Wemby closing on you, and you know he's going to block that shot unless you put it 15 feet in the air. Like, that's the only way this happens. You've got to have a teardrop, high-arcing shot that maybe gets over his outstretched fingertips, but it might be enough for him to at least deflect it, you know? Like, it's just, you're right, he's altering the game in so many ways, but he does it also offensively. Like, most of these guys, like, Mitchell Robinson, you watch him for the Knicks, can't shoot free throws. It's embarrassing. Like, 30, I think going into the game, he's shooting, like, 29% from the free throw line. That, in the playoffs, that is embarrassing. But he's a great rim protector, great offensive rebounder. He affects the game in certain ways. Victor Wembanyama takes that, puts that on steroids, then also does it on the offensive side where he has 39 and 15. I mean, rebounds aren't really offense. I mean, there's offensive rebounds, but you get what I mean. Like, he's doing everything. I mean, it's everything for this team at a height and just dimensions that we've never seen before. So,
and his ball handling is pretty good for a guy that size. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. It's not like, you know, usually I remember, you know, when I was young, you'd see these guys like Sean Bradley and, you know, Yao Ming, and that's how you could get them. They were not great dribblers, and they had to dribble real high and everything. And that's not really a big weakness for him.
And that's why, honestly, I look at, you know, I look at what the NBA has become, and the evolution of the big man is he's a great example of it. But he's also very different than Nikola Jokic, right? They're both centers. Oh, they're both over, you know.
And you've got like Giannis. Center. Like, there's definitely a different style of big man out, but
completely different. It went away for a while, and then the next wave of 7-footers or guys around 7 feet, bigs, you know, they all got better at just playing like a guard, a more complete game. It wasn't just get the ball in the post, dominate, you know, just bullying guys. Even if you were, you know, skilled in the post like a Hakeem Olajuwon, who works with Victor Wembanyama. Hakeem Olajuwon, one of the greatest post scorers we've ever seen. He could shoot a little bit, you know, but it wasn't required of bigs when he played in the NBA. Now it is. Now you're expected or you're limited. And that's why some people look at Cameron Boozer and are like, well, he can shoot, but, you know, he's a little bit more of a traditional big in some ways. I think we're limiting him there. But you, like, people are comparing him to Victor Wembanyama or somebody like a, you know, Nikola Jokic that can run the floor like a point guard. But at the same time, it's like, okay, compared to them, he may not have that skill set, but Cameron Boozer is a great playmaker. He's a great passer. So it's just now we've elevated the expectations of 7-footers in the NBA to the point where you need them to be like Victor Wembanyama. Again, that's why the Spurs tanked, and they got it, and it worked out for him. Sometimes it works. So the hope is that the Wizards will get the same thing, and then it's AJ Abansa that's going to be there. We'll talk to Ben Strober in 30 minutes about that. Nick Ashew on the Fan.